Vedder does not force his way. There's no need for it. The armature does not cede, though there are slight internal rupturings. What is most apparent becomes less so as the day lifts its guise, that is, assuming such a differentiation. The first deliveries arrive well after Feder's installment at his desk, and the progressive streaks of light stripping the space of its density. He might describe his own head as a strobe under these effects, but is engrossed in several small objects that have escaped supervisory description. The vertical inclination of the project is altogether haphazard. At another geographical location, a more expansive complex might be alluded to, then possibly implemented. For the moment, it remains pure conjecture and is, as a result, unfathomable. These are the petty machinations of repetitive entry and do nothing to advance operations. The most urgent concern is, of course, the distribution of privations. A vertical alignment of rectangular recesses in the wall opens and shuts its iron traps. A hollow knocking resounds. Thereupon, several bodies are seen to be falling from high windows. Each is disposed of immediately, indicating to a searching populace the futility of subsequent questionings. It remains unclear, however, whether the seabed can accommodate such populations and what effect such additions to the oceanic flora will have on the tides. None at all. Feder loosens his collar, a vein throbs persistently at his temple. A bead of sweat forms over one eye. His right leg twitches under the wooden boards of his desk. The lights flicker and illumine as before. These minor irregularities evidence looming beleaguerment, though these terms are not those which will be employed. The hostilities are imaginatively orchestrated to insinuate themselves into the captive bodies, which will then seek their own destruction. The surrounding area is blockaded, though to ill effect. The biologic proposal favors internal somatic combustion. There is no need to propel oneself from a window ledge. Given enough time, the body will dispose of itself. What is unpredictable is the intensity of the cry. Further sighs emerge from the mouths of the workers. Feder is just one such artisan, though his responsibilities are far more elaborate. Nostalgia is, in this instance, sheer wantonness, to die willingly or as a matter of course. Do you know Argentina? Small mechanical errors register systemic disquiet without much warning. The signals, though imperceptibly altered, continue to guide the movement as priorly ordained. The advantage over such programming is that it need only periodic revision. If a glitch should introduce itself between revisions, then it will have the benefit of a brief hiatus within which to wreak a limited amount of havoc, enough to be perceivable upon the next revision. If, however, its subterfuge is sufficiently clever as to pass unnoticed, then it will be able to insinuate itself into the very functioning of the mechanism. The crowd that gathers round the body is quickly dispersed. It is days now, perhaps weeks, since it has been lying there at the foot of the stair. Because it gives no immediate evidence of decay, the body is assumed to be that of a sleeping person and thus an inconvenience to occasional foot traffic. Because, however, its position is so idiosyncratic, it is left undisturbed in its slumber. Under the blanket, a fine line of blood has trickled its way into the public square. Because of the ambient temperatures, no notice is given to this particular sign, and so the body is granted its silent demise. The fist of history is mighty that will fall upon the fool who looked the other way. But surely we are looking, are we not? Straight into the mouth of it with its rotten teeth and foul breath and nicotine stains, the stench concealed by the rank of the edifice itself. Does it reek of death? Perhaps it is we who stink. We are the ones, after all, who had it built. Must we pity the pharaohs, their Egypt? I saw her, sir. It was I, in the exact place where she fell. Fidel, help us move this cabinet, will you? The chocolatiers are first rate. They are the great purveyors of the everlasting century. It could just as easily have been the furriers. The great institutions line their walls with fur the way they line their innards with chocolate, fantastical though it may seem. It was an acquired taste of decadence, a new expressionism, everything askew and finely linened. This was necessary in order to accommodate the assassinations. These were a hallmark of advancement and attested to the intransigency of an acquired disgrace. Numbers are so fickle. 11 million, 30,000, 800,000, 34. What Fidel doesn't understand is how it is the mail is so late. He's been poring over the same document for several hours now. Though time does sometimes stand still for him, the mail always arrives on schedule. Now this too will have to be questioned. Without warning, Fidel looks across the room. It is neither as big as he had imagined it, nor as narrow as he had become accustomed to. I am no insect, he thinks to himself, adjusting the angle of the sentry. He touches the edge of his chair and remembers he has not eaten in days, possibly weeks. An elevator opens on a lower floor. Shouting can be heard. He adjusts his collar. Dust continues to gather in the corners. Tomorrow, he will attend to it. Not far from there, a group of children has unearthed the morbid bug. One after another, they pluck off its legs, scattering them like wishes. Tomorrow's a word that had not occurred to Fidel before. The whole mechanism grinds to a halt. I saw Argentina in the body of a boy. She was struggling to be free. Her sorrow was strained and her city was solarized. She grabbed at ceilings and ornate swings and turned walls from their foundations and gathered dogs at her heels. In the event, I heard her say repeatedly, in the event. And she entered there unbidden and emerged unwilled. There were hands that reached toward her and birds that filled the sky. In windows that cracked from the many windstorms and springs that circulated underground. Her clothing was outmoded and her speech was forlorn and her emotion denied the commonplace and startled the crowd and none listened even though she spoke aloud. For every street lamp a grenade was launched, for every shattered eardrum an abandoned outpost. The debris floated on the seas and the seas floated on the ash. And the ships sank the onlookers, and there were sparrows with gulls and blackbirds with geese, and one after another the stones fell and the bodies became exposed and the names fell into desuetude. I touched her name and the letters fell away, and what I was left with was Ilie. And this was given to the boy, though not by me nor by her directly. They coupled at a center, and there she struggled, and he as well, holding his stomach, and she pushing against his organs, pulling oranges from trees and whispering grand avenues and plucking the boulevards of their daisies. She boarded a tram with the Jugendstil hovering above her head in gold leaf and stucco and bundles of grapes. and she pulled them off their soft stems, launching them beneath the wheels of cars. Who's to say what she might claim of history, or whether the boy is aware of her despair, which is by turns his own? She grasps downward and upward, and the dream she dreams is filled with viscera and violent love. Escalators and detention centers, conveyor belts and bones and rotten meat. The film is projected despite its mediocrity, and a meeting is arranged in a by now familiar place. She rises in the way one falls and is greeted with a fervor reserved for murder or dispassion. If she dies, she dies willingly, but she's not prepared to die yet. She runs down the brightly lit halls, she crawls along the street, she eats with both hands, she wraps seas into her sleep. Her charge is unbearable, and what I see is unrecountable, were it not for her name, Argentina. Argentina, as she is lowered into the ground. Argentina refuses to specify. She holds a series of documents in one hand, which take the form of a fan. It is hot in this country. The officials are relatively unconcerned. They will make her wait. The questions come in swift succession, none of which she evades. Simply, she refuses to specify. Name. As if a name could settle any question at all. This country is a southern country, or else it is a northern country in summer. In either instance, there is a rise in the murder rate at the first of spring or hurricane season, which Argentina refers to as the tempest. But the tempest could mean any place also. She is awaiting confirmation. She may be asked to strip herself of her clothes. It is more likely she will be made to stand like this until tomorrow, well after the ship will have left the harbor. But there are other ships and plenty of fools, she thinks. Does she think this? Her mind is closed to us. She stands still for the photograph. There is no ship. There is no sea. The airstrips by now are obsolete. So where does Argentina think she's going? Geography, like anything else, is a kind of conviction. Am I a likeness to the living?